for a number of years, and I'm also on the bug busting team. If you've got any questions about those two kind of roles, you can always catch up with me this afternoon, probably at the Royal Oak. What this talk is today is somewhat of a cautionary tale. We, FreeBSD, has built a lights out facility up in New Jersey, courtesy of New York Internet, and the challenges that we faced have to do somewhat with building a lights out facility in the first place, but primarily have to do with building such a thing with purely volunteer effort. So what we have is a cautionary tale of what we would not have done had we known better. And in particular, I want to go through the number of lessons that we learned along the way. What I'm hoping that this does not come off of as is the blame game, because I think if we knew now what we or knew then what we now know, we could have gotten a lot more work done a lot more quickly with a lot less frustration. So what we tried to accomplish is a completely from scratch lights out facility built with all volunteer labor except for the things that we absolutely had to do with respect to the infrastructure, like bringing electricians in and this kind of thing. The intention was that every piece of equipment be something that is a FreeBSD-derived product, which means the switches have embedded FreeBSD in them, or for the servers are the, something we build ourselves, but for in the cases where a vendor does it better, then we wanted to go with the vendor. The other thing that we tried to do is, since the foundation is not an extremely rich foundation, is to minimize the expenditures. So what we were offered is several cabinets in an entirely new facility, which they were building out, and basically, here are your empty cabinets, here is the power, here is your internet connection, and whatever you do from that is your own problem. So everything else you supply. It sounds great, so what could possibly go wrong? Well, for the first thing, what we were trying to do is build a complete failover facility for the BSD.org machines at Yahoo, which means including the DNS, the mail, the archives for the www, a pointy hat instance, and all this kind of thing. And I'll talk a little bit more about Pointy Hat, but for those people that are not familiar with it, we have a what we call a package build cluster, and that is a machine that dispatches to a number of other machines to continuously do our package builds for the five different architectures and the three or sometimes four different OS releases. So what we thought initially in our optimism, as engineers are always optimistic, is that it would only take us about 5 months to instantiate all this stuff and go live with it. So, in theory, we were going to be live late last year. So, the administration systems, the source control systems, the data backup, and the package building systems were the kind of the goal. The reason why we wanted to go FreeBSD-based as much as possible is to some extent eat our own dog food and have a really good story that, yes, you can build an entire data facility based on things that are either that have FreeBSD in them or for things like the DNS and the web servers is just running standard FreeBSD. However, for the cases where a vendor does it better, let's go ahead and use the vendor. So there's no reason to If we can get switches from someone, e.g. like Juniper, then go ahead and use those kind of switches where they've put a great deal of time into working on the interface and making it a lot more easily configurable. So the routers, the power and serial controllers, we also used from a FreeBSD-based system. And the disk backup, we were hoping to get something donated to us. And for the Pointy Hat instance, which is the package build machine, we decided to go ahead, rather than just using some kind of used system, to go ahead and go out to the commercial vendors and buy a system pre-configured with FreeBSD. And the main reason for that was to get a system that was known working and had a high level of disk performance, because that machine is very, very disk bound. So the FreeBSD Foundation has a budget of several hundred thousand dollars a year. If the FreeBSD Foundation had a budget of several million dollars a year, or tens of millions of dollars a year, like some of our competing operating systems, we would probably be in a lot better shape in terms of not having to minimize initial outlays of things. But what we wanted to do is say, well, if we can do it with some kind of donated equipment or using more volunteer labor rather than some kind of paid labor, then we are far better off doing that. At least that was our assumption. So, but in any case, really out of frugality, you only want to spend money where it is most effective. So this led us to the first mistake, which was an over-reliance on donated gear. And again, I don't wish to blame anyone, but what we wound up doing is frustrating ourselves with some of the donated gear. And there's a difference between expense and cost. So free isn't really free. If you have something that's donated to you that has sufficient RAM and enough disk and has been tested and configured, then that's absolutely wonderful. If you have something that arrives kind of on the back of the truck and has been decommissioned and we're pretty sure this works, then you may have actually not done yourself the favor that you think. What happens is that no one really enjoys installing this stuff, whether it's donated, whether it's brand new, or whatever. And the cost of that is really constant between hardware that's cast off and hardware that's brand new. So no one enjoys pulling hardware, installing hardware, no one enjoys pulling cables, and absolutely no one enjoys documenting any of this. This is all very thankless work and frustrating, and is only noticed if you get it wrong. No one notices if you get it right. So not all donated gear is equal. And in particular, what we found, and I'll present in a couple of slides, is how RAM dependent we are on for the package building machines. So what we wound up doing is shipping a bunch of machines on site, which were in random configurations, and attempted to do a bunch of the work on site. That turns out to be a mistake. The on-site work, or the on-site time you have, turns out to be very limited, and you're basically operating in a limited time frame and with limited resources, and you really need to use those to the best degree you can. So the more prep work you do on-site, off-site, the less that you have to do under those frustrating conditions. So one of the cabinets wound up being populated with systems that were donated from an anonymous donor, who probably many of you know who the anonymous donor was. Those are reasonably new systems, and we went ahead and turned 10 of them into what we call package building nodes, currently set up for AMD 64. And what these do, again, is to build the packages that will either be on the release media or that people can download as checkpoints during the release, during the life of a release. So, for instance, right now we are building packages for what we call 7 stable, 8 stable, and 9 current on AMD 64 and i386. We're also doing them for the Tier 2s, but that's kind of outside the scope of this talk. So, as the ports tree, which has 23,000 and counting ports, changes every day, you're trying to continuously keep up with the volume of this and to make packages as quickly as you can. So what we found in the past year, which we did not know before because we really didn't have the resources to do any of these kind of metrics, is that RAM is king. Most of the machines we had up until a couple of years ago were 4-gig machines, and it turns out that is just simply inadequate to build an optimum number of packages per hour. So RAM dominates. Disk performance is secondary, and really the CPU performance is not really the major determining factor on how many packages you can build per hour. So M packages per hour seems to be linear with respect to RAM from somewhere between 2 gig and below 2 gig, you're really just thrashing, all the way up to about 24 gig. So with 2 gig, you can probably build 4 packages simultaneously. With 24 gig, 20 to 40. So what each of these package build cheroots, which is what we're doing to make things build in a clean environment, the minimum is going to take about 512 meg, because you're actually instantiating an instance of FreeBSD with its own kernel and user land, which is then run in the cheroot, and that's kept up to date with, you know, 7 stable or 8 stable or 9 current. But even a minimal package build, for instance, let's say one of the P5 modules, is still going to take up about 512 meg. And again, then you go all the way up to the giant monster that is OpenOffice, and that's going to take around 8 gig. So this limits the number of simultaneous things you can do before you just begin running out to swap. And a few packages we don't even try to build on pointing half. There's a couple of scientific packages and a few of the games that take so much RAM and so much disk to build, you know, 16 gig of RAM and a couple hundred gig of disk by the time that everything is said and done, that we just say, okay, anybody that wants these really has to go ahead and build them themselves. The problem we have with having these large builds enabled is that our queue manager is naive about the capabilities of a node. So we have some nodes that are dual P3s all the way up to things that are actually relatively modern, and it doesn't know to send OpenOffice to the relatively modern machines and not send it to the blade server. So when OpenOffice winds up on the blade server, OpenOffice has no chance of building, because we will soon run the blade server on swap. So there was a question. Yes. Those are medium. Yeah. They're medium heavyweight, but those will even build on our HP blades. So I haven't seen that many problems building them on our clean environment. So if you have, come talk to me and I'll be interested to hear how that's going. Although Erwin, who runs the i386 builds, can probably comment on that more than I can. I tend to run the Tier 2 builds and try to debug the problems with the key manager and to keep the nodes running themselves. And so I know what the status of packages are on kind of the edge conditions and not the mainstream. So what we learned about these nodes is that there really isn't a good reason to install one with less than 8 gig, because it takes the same amount of time to administer a system that's got 2 gig as one with 8 gig. In fact, it actually takes more, because it tends to run out and swap more often and hit these edge conditions more often. There are several bugs in the kernel that one of our previous port manager guys was actually also a source committer, and he was actually much better than, say, I am at debugging kernel problems and determining where there were bottlenecks and going in and fixing them. So it wasn't as difficult for him as it seems to be for me to keep up with such things. So a package node with 8 gig on it is going to be a lot less trouble for the port manager team than one with 2 or 4, and it seems like there is really no reason in modern times with modern costs of RAM to go with less than 16 gig. However, your donated systems are probably not going to come with 8 or 16 gig. So these donated systems that we got from various people are, you know, older systems, P3, P4, you know, one or two gig of RAM and limited disk. And our idea was, well, you know, these things are are free, and free is very free is always attractive. So let's perhaps use them for things like small servers. You know, use one for your DHCP server, one for your, serving up the website and all this kind of thing that really aren't particularly compute intensive. These days, it could well be that fewer larger systems with things in jails would be a lot easier to administer because now you've got less points of failure for your hardware. But the painful thing, the painful truth, is that it takes the same amount of on-site work to set up one of these small, older, obsolete machines than it does to set up an absolutely brand new machine. This is obvious when you think about it, but when you're thinking in terms of accepting donations, gosh, free sounds good. Well, there is a cost to free, and the cost is constant per each system that you install. The next big mistake that we made is using unfamiliar equipment. When you are on site, you don't want to be learning some new piece of gear, especially if the piece of gear is kind of in beta shape anyway. You'll have a lot of frustration. You'll have finger pointing. You'll have people going, well, obviously it works, and you just don't understand how to use it. So for people that are professional system admins, we should have relied on their advice more about what gear to use and less of our own, rolling our own. So if you're wasting volunteer time on the learning curve on site, you're just going to lead to frustration. And it's not really fair to ask volunteers to be beta testers. So if you're going to be doing things like that, then, you know, set up a small set of systems in your lab and just do a dry run. The other mistake that we made is we thought that by going to vendors that embed FreeBSD systems that they would be simply delighted to donate machines to us because, after all, we're FreeBSD and we're really, really cool. And we kind of based our assumptions on that, but the reality is that when you talk to the people in the engineering team that actually know what FreeBSD is because they use it every day in their work, they're really, really willing to investigate that and push that within their own organizations because they know FreeBSD is really cool and what it does for them. However, that's the engineering team. The engineering team and the accounting teams may or may not even talk to each other. They may despise each other, as happens in many corporations. And so what we found is that we would approach a technical contact and say, it would be really cool if we could get this giant filer donated to us. And they'd say, yeah, that would be really cool. I mean, we've got some, you know, that are like one rev down. Let's go do it. And they go talk to accounting, and accounting says, well, we have to talk to legal, and legal has to talk to accounting. And the upper management goes, what is this FreeBSD thing anyway? And then everybody approves, and then there's a reorg, and lather, rinse, repeat for several months. So really, to get everybody at a larger corporation to sign on to such things can take 3 to 6 months. What really helps on this is prep work done by the foundation. If the foundation has established contacts, not just technical contacts, but contacts within the management of an organization and sold them on, here is what FreeBSD is doing for you, here it's how you're saving your costs, and by helping us, then that eventually comes around and helps you. It's a much easier way to go in because at that point you can approach the management people saying, now we would like a donation, and it doesn't have to come up all these levels. The other problem is that if you're going to a vendor and, e.g., asking for a discount or a donation, they may at some point say, well, you know, we gave you the equipment. Oh, now you want a service contract for free? That's another department, you know, another billing strategy. And they may become frustrated. It's like, well, we already gave them the equipment. What do they want in terms of, what else do they think they want? So you don't want to create a sense of over-obligation on their part, and you also don't want to get your volunteers into the point where they're like, well, they gave us the equipment, why wouldn't they give us, X, Y, and Z kind of thing? So after all, we do want the bug requests, or service calls and bug requests, not just to go to dev null. The best way that we found to do that is to ask for a discount or a donation for the equipment, but always go ahead and just pay the full price for the support contract, and that clears up a lot of that kind of possible miscommunication. So, but that's really kind of a subset of forgetting to do prep work. You don't really want to be setting the BIOS parameters once you're on site. Really, ideally, what you would like to do is, do one run through with each of your servers to get all that kind of stuff correct. And in particular, don't leave the system in press F1 to continue mode. Leave it in PXE boot mode, because now, if you mess up your remote serial, now you're just sitting there going, well, until someone goes on site, we have no way to talk to this machine. And that's really where you want to be doing your RAM install, for instance, because it's just a lot easier to pop the case when you're not standing there in between cabinets like this, and, oh, did you mean that had to go this way, and all this manner of thing. So, and really, you can trip yourself up with the serial console not being redirected and all this manner of thing. The other thing that you might think of doing is, with one switch and one server and one console access, serial console access, just set them up and do a dry run. Will all these things talk to each other? And, oh, yeah, those adapters. So now we're out of the technical problems, and let's talk about the people problems. We're all engineers, and we tend to overcommit and think that all things are going to be easy and that really it's not going to take that much time to do things, and we don't have any personal ego investment in this. And, of course, we're actually human beings. So if you've got two or three people thinking that they're in charge of doing the planning and looking for the cables and all this manner of thing, then since everyone's in charge, no one's in charge. And items just get dropped on the floor. So you need to have your war plan before you go. So you need to, and each of these things is obvious, at least in retrospect. So before driving the facility, is all the equipment there? Is the stuff that you had shipped from somewhere else actually there? You need to have somebody verify that. Have you remembered to get all the power cables, these stupid adapters, and is the networking set up and all this manner of thing? You need to have an idea of which system is going in which cabinet. And I'll talk a little bit about how we solve that problem. The interconnects you might actually want to go ahead and think about as well, the between cabinet interconnects and what more or less what's going to go on what switch. You don't need to have it down to the individual cable, but it's like, well, these systems are going to go on this part of this switch. And of course, the really dumb thing, which actually didn't happen here, but has happened other places, it's like, you mean this server doesn't actually fit in this box? So you need to have one person who's going to take responsibility on site for verifying that each system works. Not necessarily configured properly, but means that you can at least access it. And again, if you don't pick one person to walk through each of the systems, then everybody else is going to think that everybody else does it. While someone's on site, you need someone off site communicating with them, IRC, phone, or IM, or what have you, for as soon as the system is installed, verifying that they can talk to it and control it remotely. So you need to decide at that point what configuration can be done later and what's the absolute minimum that you need to have done before the people leave. And as a side effect of that, you will want to decide who is going to do the post-configuration or post-install configuration. So the mistake that you make in doing this kind of thing is that you're assuming that volunteers are employees. In For people that have actually built professional data centers, you can, of course, just go tell someone, get your butt down there and put the RAM in and get on with it. But we're a volunteer organization, and that doesn't work very long. You don't keep your volunteers, especially if your volunteers are working on systems that aren't really in their area of interest, e.g. source committers working on port systems or vice versa. So it's not a command kind of environment. Your priorities may not be my priorities. So, for instance, I really, really want those package building systems done, but it really may be more key for the project to have the administration systems set up and going first. And since we tend to overcommit, we think, well, you know, we can just go there for a few hours, install a few systems, run a couple of cables, and, you know, we can knock off by lunch. And it turns out not to be the case. And all this stuff, as I mentioned on a previous slide, they're really thankless tasks. They're not fun. It's just something that you have to do and to get on to something that's like actually more interesting. And what I think we forgot to do with the folks that were on site is we forgot to say the magic words, as Betty Linneman kept reminding me when I was 3 and 4 years old. And we're also human. So there's only so many hours that you can sit in a colo and stare at this stuff before you start grinding your teeth and getting a little grumbly. I find it's like 5 or 6 hours, and I'm pretty much done. It's just, especially if you're going back and forth between, you know, having to be here and then having to go run over there to check the remote VGA and then having to do this and having to do that, sooner or later, during the afternoon, you're going to say, you know what, this isn't fun anymore. But the people that are on one side of the cable and on the other side of the cable may be assuming that, well, I don't understand why it's being so difficult for you. You know, obviously, this is incredibly easy. So, well, it is, except for the fact that the PXE boot is actually not working because this system wasn't configured correctly, which means that we need the cable moved over there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if you are communicating that way, sooner or later somebody's going to say, you know what, this guy's a jerk. He doesn't know what he's doing. I could have done it in half the time, et cetera, et cetera. Murphy's a cruel master. If anything can go wrong, it will, as we all know. And so if you think that you're going to be able to boot from the system that PXE boot from the system that you just installed, well, then you're going to find out that you put the wrong image on it, and it should only take an hour or so to generate that image again, except for the fact that you can't upload it because that cable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if you're frustrating your volunteers, sooner or later it's going to lead to burnout, and people are going to say, well, I'll work on that, well, maybe soon, and then it never happens. So, the lessons learned about equipment is that you can cost yourself substantial time by accepting donations that only need a little bit of work. Murphy will ensure that they need a lot of work. In terms of hard drives, there's really no reason to install used hard drives. Just buy new ones. For RAM, go ahead and put in as much RAM as the system will take. Putting in the RAM before you've actually got the thing in the rack is easy. Putting in the RAM after it's in the rack and somebody now has to deinstall it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is annoying to the point where it's not worth doing, and it's very hard to ask people to go do that because why didn't you think of it in the first place? So as a result of our frustration, we adopted a guideline. So a set of guidelines for machine donations. Basically, we want to see that it actually works before it goes on the truck to be shipped up to us. And we also said for systems that are older and obsolete, because of this constant cost of installing an individual system, there's some that we're no longer willing to accept. So in terms of the management, one of the things that we did right is we use something called RackMonkey, which is an open source product that allows you to do a little bit of management of your physical facility. You can define cabinets. You can define cabinets as being within buildings, and you can find buildings as being within sites. So as soon as we put in each server, we put in its serial number, the statistics off of its boot information in terms of RAM and things like this, and what serial and power it was wired up to. And if we hadn't done that, we would have really tied ourselves up in knots. Unfortunately, RackMonkey is not a very complete thing. It really is set up for this U contains this information. So it doesn't really understand the concept of cable interconnects. It doesn't really understand the concept of up and down mounted power strip. So for that, we just hacked it by saying, okay, U47 is a U46 cabinet, but U47 has the information about the power controller. If you're in a commercial environment, it's probably well worth the money to buy a license for something that's a really professional product that allows all this kind of information to be put into it. The other thing that we didn't do, and just simply because no one was familiar with it, is this newfangled IPMI thing, which I think would have saved us a lot of time and frustration. So let's summarize all this. Volunteers are not employees. It's not a command environment. You are asking people nicely to spend their free time on something that's not really all that fun to do. Volunteer time is your most important resource. Your most important resource is not equipment, not donated equipment. It is the willingness of your volunteers to go do these thankless tasks. Too many cooks spoil the broth. You need to have one person in charge, and that person decides, gets commitments from everyone to do the individual subtasks. As engineers, we let ourselves overcommit. Don't let yourself do that. And sometimes free is too expensive. Finally, never forget to give credit for these thankless tasks. So, having said that, now it's time for the thank yous. So for the on-site work, Stephen Kreutzer helped organize it, and John Baldwin and George Neville Neal have made several trips down there. Brad Davis has also made a trip to the facility because some of his systems are also, just by coincidence, in the same facility. And so he's used some of his free time when he's been there to help us with the installs. Philip Gallucci, P. Gallucci, who probably some of you don't know, who is a ports committer, has also been able to stop by and help us out of some of the jams. Simon has been doing a lot of the work to do the off-site configuration. Steve Wills helped donate a bunch of systems to us, and Joe Marcus Clark, who's also on Port Manager, helped to pack them up and ship them, which wasn't fun either. The folks at IX Systems gave us a discount on the Pointy Hat head nodes, which is the systems that have all this disk that is that we wanted to make sure that these are, you know, basically top-line systems rather than whatever we could find with donation. We've had several vendors chip in, and I'm not sure exactly. I'm not up to date on the press release on who we gave credit for that. So, but I will refer you to the foundation's press release about this facility. And of course, the foundation itself has sponsored travel and paid for equipment to be installed there. And finally, don't panic. So, any questions? There are certain things, yes, and certain things, no. Our experience with VMware instances is that, which is a different facility from this, is that unless you are much more versed in tuning for performance, that the added burden of having each of these things, the added administration burden, may or may not be worth it. And again, I'm sure a VMware expert could do this a lot better than we did. We were really hoping that the offer of a large number of VMware instances would be sufficient for our package building, and so far it has remained frustrating. You know, performance is 25% of that of just a piece of raw hardware. Now, in terms of some of the other things like the FreeBSD WWW server. The belief is that those need to be on actual physical hardware. So there's reasons that you want to access control some of the things like that, and the you know, the user authentication and this kind of thing. And we really rather have just hardware to do that. The VMware instances have been offered to developers for other kind of regression testing, and that's apparently been successful. But sometimes your own dedicated hardware is just the right answer. Other questions? Okay, well then everybody should go get coffee. Thank you.